Welcome back, everyone, to the third module. I know that if you implement these things that we've been talking about, these different tips, strategies, and techniques, that you'll be able to uncover, realize, and accomplish more than anything that you ever thought possible. And I truly believe that nothing is impossible. Our past two segments, we have talked about and gone through basically what this program was all about. We have delved into self-image and how important your self-image is in order for you to work inside out. You know, a lot of people will work from the outside in, but our focus is focusing on the inside out. Because really what happens at the end of the day is all these things that we do and all these things that we talk about, yes, they'll make an impact to everyone outside of your world. But what more importantly, what happens is they're making an impact to you in your inside world. And that's really the goal, for you to experience more joy, prosperity, and happiness at the end of the day, and better relationships and better connections. In that first module, we talked about your self-image. We talked about the I am statements, how frequently you should do them, and also how to turn negative comments. So I hope that you're implementing those things now and that you are finding more positivity in your life. You're finding more wealth come to you and more things that you can realize that you can be grateful for, and journal those things that you're grateful for. Our last module, we talked about your body and how your body is transmitting, or is this translator to everyone outside of you, but also what it's translating to the inside of you, and how as you use your body and you project gestures, or you smile more, or you have better, more concentrated eye contact so that you're really present with whoever it is you're working with or speaking to or interacting with, that you'll be able to achieve those goals that you have and be able to, again, develop stronger connections. All these modules that we're taking you through in this journey that we're going on is all about developing a stronger sense of presence, or executive presence, as the terminology is utilized today. All these things will help you tap into that, or that gravitas, the gravitas of who you are. Now, if someone were to ask you, what is executive presence? You may have a hard time describing that. But when you see it, you know it and you feel it. And first off, we need to know it inside of us, that it is possible, that we are the star of our world, and not in a overconfident or talking down way, but more of a, it's just an assurance that you have, that you understand who you are, what your mission is, and what you can achieve, and what is possible for you, and the impact that you have on those that touch your world, and whose world you touch. All right, in this module, module three, we're going to focus on communication and communication with your words. So last module, we talked about communicating with your body and all those nonverbals. Those nonverbals make up 93% of communication, whereas 7% is your words. Now, when I was thinking about this module and this aspect, I thought, we spend so much time on the words that we use, or we select, or we think about, or so that we sound intelligent, educated, and like we really know what we're talking about, or that we're not sounding like we're just blowing smoke. But it's only 7% of the way that you communicate. So as I'm communicating with you on this audio program, you're hearing my words, you're thinking about, and that's going through your head, the stories and things that I'm sharing. But what's also happening is you're also getting some nonverbals. Some of those nonverbals are the tone of my voice, the melody of my voice, the urgency that I put in my voice, the excitement that I put in my voice, or the softness that I put. So you're hearing that tone that's coming through. You're sensing as well my energy on this program. So those are all a part of my nonverbals. Communicating with your words, though, is obviously very impactful. And especially if we're getting up to give a presentation, or we're in a meeting and we get called out to share a viewpoint, or we get even stopped in the hallway and someone asks us a question and we get stymied or stuck for a minute. All of those words sometimes get stuck in our throats. And then we walk away from a situation. I don't know if this has ever happened to you. You're like, man, I should have said this, or I should have said that. That especially happens to me when I am in a confrontation. Fortunately, that doesn't happen very much, being in confrontation. So I'm very blessed in that aspect. But when confrontations come, I'm so starstruck by it, of whoa, that, you know, what's happening, that my brain feels like it just got taken out and put on a shelf. So after it occurs and I think about what I could have said or how I could have been more diplomatic, this segment is going to talk about how to communicate with some diplomacy and tact. We're also going to share with you some power words that you can implement into your everyday life, your communication. Also, we'll talk about what words you need to eradicate from your vocabulary. Don't you love that word? Eradicate. And in fact, the use of vocabulary, the more you can tap into a stronger use of vocabulary, what a great help and tip that is for you. In fact, I'll share with you a tip and way that you can increase your vocabulary. We are also going to talk about the power of the pause. So let me pause for effect. The power of the pause is really critical, and we'll talk about the benefits for the power of the pause and how it can help eliminate things. And then last but not least, vocal variety. Now we're talking about a variety show, but we're going to talk about vocal variety and how important that is in your communication. All right, lots to cover. Let's jump through it. Now, your words are so critical to your success, and communicating with diplomacy and tact is also key. As you do so, I want to share with you a tool. And the first is, when you get thrown into a situation where you're not quite sure what to say, or you get thrown out of whack, or you're getting up to give a presentation, or in a meeting, or you're going on a first date with someone and you're a little bit nervous, first thing to do is take a breath. So let's, right now, everybody take a breath with me. Okay, I know I feel better and I feel calmer, and I hope you do too. Breathing. Take a breath. Get a lot of air. In fact, I have a little story about taking a breath. I had the opportunity, I sing a lot, and I had the opportunity to sing in front of some colleagues and coworkers years ago. Now, I was pretty young when this occurred, and as I began to sing, it was a holiday party, and the Rent-A-Santa guy came and roasted the faculty and myself in this party. So everybody's laughing, and of course, the closer it's getting to me to sing, I'm getting a little more nervous. The butterflies are forming, right? And I'm getting a little anxious. The stress responses are kicking in, that fight response or that fleeing response that I may want to do, that folding, that fainting, all those F responses. My director, the chair of the department, I started to sing, and it was not sounding good whatsoever. Director of my program, she said, Linda, she whispered it, take a breath. Take a breath, she said. I tried to get a breath, and meanwhile, I'm still trying to sing, and it was the worst experience of singing that I've ever had. Now, I share that with you, not to make you cry with me, because trust me, I did cry. Then I swore I would never sing for my colleagues ever, ever, ever again. And then I did. 20-something years later, I did. And I kind of attribute that to, again, a resource I'm going to share with you a little bit later on. But taking a breath is really key whenever we get thrown in any kind of communication session where we're nervous or we're being confronted or our breath, quite frankly, gets taken away. Take a moment, take a breath. Okay, took another breath. All right, the second thing we need to do is we're going to turn on our own editor. And that means this editor that occurs in our head. So we have the power to put a gate on our mouth, a invisible gate. In other words, we get to decide what words we use and should not use. We have a brain and we have an opportunity to utilize it and put it into practice. So when something comes at you, you want to evaluate the situation and the person. That's the first thing. Make an evaluation. And through that evaluation, if something that comes at you, a situation, what is the situation really implying? What's the undertone? What is the deeper meaning of the situation? Or if it's a person coming at you maybe strongly with a problem and they're criticizing you or there's conflict happening, what is the person not saying? Evaluate. Look deeper. The next step is you get to decide or determine your approach. Again, you've got this invisible gate that you can shut or open on your mouth. You get to determine what words you want to say and what words you should not say. You get to craft that. Our words can uplift and inspire and encourage and just bring light to others' lives. Just think about it. Those things that you say to your kids, like, wow, you did such a great job, or you are so awesome, or you're so smart, or I just love how good you make me feel. When we say those things to our kids, don't we visibly see them start to increase in stature? And actually, they start to breathe deeper and they expand with air because we're empowering them. We're inspiring them. Just on the opposite side, when we come out and we start saying belittling things, we start cutting down, we start criticizing. You're so stupid. Why did you do that? Don't you know better? You know better. Those things, that approach is more of a negative approach. But as we have these occurrences happen in our life, we get to determine how we open that gate. So as I said, our words can be used for good. They can uplift. They can inspire. They also, and in fact, in the New Testament, in the Bible, talks about how our words can be worse than swords, weaponry. Our words can inflict so much pain. So we have a lot of power. This gate, this invisible gate that's on our mouth, has a lot of power to do good or to tear down. And to cause lasting positive effects for years to come, or create a moment in time that words that are said can never be taken back. So your approach is critical. The next aspect of this editor, this model that we can implement, is to inquire. Inquire basically is another form of asking a question, asking lots of questions. So the more you ask questions, the deeper you're going to be able to understand that person you're trying to communicate. Think about your questions. Questions that are open-ended, questions that begin with how or what. Those are open questions. When, where. Closed-ended questions are the yes-no answers, but your questions, asking more questions. This will give you much more information in order for you to determine how to communicate with diplomacy and tact. Then, as they give their responses, actually think about their responses. And as I already have mentioned and harped on a little bit, what is it they're not saying in their responses? So that's why you really need to be present in the conversation. You need to go and dig deeper. And through that, you're going to have greater understanding and be able to help come to a solution. And you're going to be able to keep your communication in a positive light. So think about their responses. Next, observe their reactions. So again, you're watching and really trying to understand and observe their reactions to your questions, your responses, your interaction. So getting out of just your head, but also getting into their head, their framework, their mindset. The more you're able to do that, the more you're going to be able to communicate with diplomacy and tact. Then the last step is, in this editor aspect, is to respond in an effective way. So you respond back so that you can put together in diplomacy and tact your response back to them. And that circle just keeps going through until you work through whatever it is you work through and you stay in that open communication. That is a model for communicating with diplomacy and tact. Now, when you are looking for certain words to use, words that uplift, not tear down, power words that you want to utilize when you're especially speaking about your feelings and you're trying to communicate what it is you're thinking, that you be very clear that it is, I believe, I think, this is my reaction. And then when you're asking questions is, how do you feel? How do you see that? Help me understand how this affects you. Then you're showing interest in that person. That word of you is very powerful when you use it in, I'm wanting to understand, I'm wanting to gather more information. When you use you, try that, saying that a lot of times with braces. When you use you a lot, you do not want to use you. There it is again. In a, you did this, I don't like it when you do that, or that's a little more direct, but you know, the you, the blame, you always do this, you always do that. Those statements are coming from a blaming standpoint. So those are words that you should not use. All right, so watch what you say in using those diplomatic and tactful word choices. Use words that tranquilize and pacify. Tranquilize the situation. Not heat it up, but tranquilize it. And part of the way to do that too is through the nonverbal, even though it's verbal, but is through your tone. So there's different ways to say certain words. For instance, my husband comes home at the end of the day. He says, Linda, how was your day? And I say, fine. Now he hears that, fine, and he thinks, okay, what happened? In fact, there's a joke in our house that fine is not an acceptable word, because fine means freaked out, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. So think about it. So think about that word then you use, fine. Now, if he were to come home and say to me, Linda, how was your day? And I said, fine. Then he's going to think, okay, it was okay. So again, that tone becomes very part of that. But using words, using statements that tranquilize and pacify. I understand that you may be feeling frustrated, or I see that you are feeling frustrated, or I think that you might be frustrated. Again, that's tranquilizing, that's pacifying, and that you are understanding that. You want to use words that ease confrontations and conflict. Again, not throwing more flame or more gas on the fire, but using words that can ease a conflict. Pointing out to, I feel this way when you say that, or this makes me feel such and such when you come at me in that tone of voice. By, again, using the I phrase, this is how I feel, you're not fighting back at them. You're explaining and being direct. Giving power and mastery to the other person. I understand that you may be frustrated. Again, you're allowing them to own up to their own feelings and the words that they get to choose. You want to use words that build individuals up and not tear them down. I've already kind of covered that, but let's say it again. You want to use words that build others up rather than tear them down. You know, verbal abuse is a big problem, and as I said, can have lifetime effects. So think about those words that you use to all those that you interact with. And quite frankly, too, the words that you say to yourself. We haven't focused on that much yet in this segment, but the words you use, even not spoken out loud, but just quietly to yourself. You drop or you spill a pitcher of milk and you say to yourself, "Oh, you're so clumsy." Or a deal that you've been trying to win or a contract you've been trying to win doesn't go through and you say, "You're such a loser." When you tell yourself that, you're degrading your self-image. So you want to use positive words. Words such as, "You got this." Or, "Wow, you're amazing." That's okay to tell yourself those great words because that's what you need. You are your worst critic and you can be your best cheerleader. You don't want to give that right to other people. You want to control that. You want to build yourself up because as you build yourself up, you're actually building your executive presence. That becomes a very critical part of that. So build yourself up. Don't tear yourself down. You want to watch what you say or use words that fit into the reality, the perception and understanding of whoever it is that's decoding that information. So in other words, I don't want to be using words like lucid or perhaps rattled or glossophobia if I'm talking to a high school student because they're not going to necessarily know what those words mean. In fact, some people don't know what a lot of words mean and they're like, and they a lot of times won't tell you that they don't know. And so they're kind of, And so you need to watch and use your words for the right situation. So expanding your vocabulary words is important and we'll get to that. But utilizing those words for the right occasions and with the right people will be critical and will give you power. Those are power words to implement. If I'm talking to a young person and some of the pop culture words, maybe a pop culture word right now is super, that's super cool. Or I was super tired or super this, super that. Maybe that's okay to use that in someone that I'm trying to connect with that's perhaps a little bit younger. But if I'm making a presentation and I'm trying to show my professionalism and my acumen, there's a word for you, acumen, understanding of the profession that I'm presenting to. And I use super this, oh, it was super that, or super, 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 then that's probably going to undermine my credibility, my professionalism, my executive presence, my polish. Okay, I think you're getting the idea. You want to use words that express responsibility. Own up to it. And sometimes even own up to it, even if you're not in the wrong. Having that integrity to be able to own up to it. So express responsibility for your feelings, especially your feelings and not theirs. So being responsible for your own feelings. I own, you can't make me happy. I get to decide whether or not I'm happy. That is a hard concept, especially for newly married newlyweds. But at the end of the day, it's not our spouse or anyone else that can make us happy. Sure, they might do things that are disappointing, but really at the end of the day, we get to choose. We get to choose our feelings, our reactions, our responses. And then lastly, use words that clearly and specifically state your message. Get to the point. Be direct so there's no misunderstanding. And you're going to be able to solve a lot of communication problems. Do not use words that are indirect. So on the opposite side, being direct. So don't be indirect. Don't be wishy-washy. get to your point, state your point, and move forward. Or couch the real issue. And couch basically means that you're kind of sugarcoating what really is the issue. You're beating around the bush. That's another phrase. Hopefully you're familiar with that. So don't couch the real issue. Don't use words that are gender insensitive. Be cognizant of the group that you're speaking with. Gender or racial insensitive. Be cognizant so that you're not offending people in that regard. On the flip side as well, don't be taking offense all the time either. Now, if there's something where someone's being gender insensitive to you a lot, then you take the opportunity to take them to the side and let them know, hey, I don't really appreciate those comments. They make me feel uncomfortable. So then you're being direct in your communication with them. But be sure that you are not using words that are gender insensitive. Do not use words that contain jargon. This is something to really watch out for, especially when you're presenting to a group that may not be familiar with your jargon. Your group, your organization, your company may use a lot of acronyms and you may just throw them out. And those that you're presenting to may go, huh? What is that? For instance, I worked in the real estate industry and actually developed certification classes in the real estate industry for years. And a term of REO stands for real estate owned. There would be a lot of times I might be presenting in front of consumers and I would just kind of throw out REO and they're like, REO? And you know, again, people don't want to say that they don't know because they're going to not feel comfortable saying they don't know because people don't like to admit typically that they don't know. But when it was evident that they didn't know, it was good for me to know and realize, oh, wait a minute, I'm using jargon. I need to eradicate, get rid of that in my jargon. So don't use words that have a lot of jargon. Don't use words that hedge others. You know, again, that's that beating around the bush or hedging. You're kind of hedging. You're not really getting to the point. You're not really talking about the issue. Also, don't use words that attack others. You don't want to do that. Again, we want our words to be affirming and lifting others up and building others up. So don't use words that attack others. You don't want to make presuppositions. In other words, you don't want to presume that you know what's going on. You want to stop, find out, inquire using that model. And then don't use words that frame a conversation like, or he said, she said, quotation marks. So again, be direct in your conversation and you will be successful. And those will become powerful words for you. Now, some words to eradicate from your vocabulary. These words are filler words or crutch words. I've already kind of talked about one of them, super this, super that. Again, what kind of pop culture word is spoken out a lot? Those are words that you need to watch out for and get rid of them because they're of no use in your vocabulary. Words such as, you know, so, and, like, those are what are referred to as crutch words. The reason you want to get those words out of your vocabulary is, quite frankly, they undermine your professionalism. You sound unconfident when you use those words. You sound like you're searching and you're not crisp and clean. Now, you may be thinking, well, what's wrong with so? You can use so in a sentence. But what happens is people use that word as a so as a kind of a thinking word. And there's really not a purpose for it. Or people will use and like and this and that and this and that. Or they'll go and again, that is giving the listener the idea that, wow, they really don't know what they're going to say next. So they're bringing that out. They're extending that word as they're trying to formulate their next thought. Those words, those filler words, those crutch words, they're also referred to. One great way to get them out of your vocabulary is a great resource to utilize and attend if you haven't had the opportunity to attend and participate in is Toastmasters International. I got pointed toward to Toastmasters International about 18 years ago by a friend, a colleague. And I'll tell you that Toastmasters is a great place to improve your speaking skills, but it's an awesome place to learn how to listen better, to develop more confidence, to develop stronger leadership skills, evaluation skills. All of those aspects come out through the Toastmasters experience. And when I initially joined Toastmasters, I didn't realize that I would get all this extra benefit. But one of the key things that happens in a Toastmasters meeting is they should have someone that's ringing what they call the ah bell. The ah bell is rung every time there's a filler word. The oh, the so, you know, like, and any phrase that's utilized a lot. Now, it might not be just those words that come out. For instance, when I was growing up, we used to have this older gentleman that would come visit our home once a month to visit our family just to see how we were doing. He was checking on us, and what a sweet older gentleman he was. His crutch word or filler word for when he was thinking of what he would say next, or just it would just come out all the time. At the end of every sentence, sometimes at the beginning of the sentence, sometimes in the middle of the sentence, the phrase was through there. So picture this. We're sitting in our living room and he's sharing with us about one of his horses that had just gotten new shoes put on its hooves, right? So he says, yeah, my horse, we just took it in to get hooves on its feet through there. And he was really excited to get back in the trailer through there. Then I decided to let him out in the pasture, and he went and rolled to his heart's delight through there. So you get the idea. He was using this phrase all the time, and it was really funny because this gentleman, this happened, he was visiting our home when I was probably not even 10 years old yet, but I had picked up on it that, wow, he says through there a lot. So what words can you eradicate from your dialogue? What words can you switch out and use so that you can be more effective in your communication? The more that you can recognize that and realize that there are certain words that you say a lot and can get rid of, the more impactful you're going to be in your ability to communicate. More polished, professional, positive, confident look and feel. So words that you can eradicate. Also, I've already talked about those power words, those words that you say to yourself. Eradicating, getting rid of those negative things that you say to yourself. Blaming yourself, blaming others. That's all a part of the verbal communication. A couple of years ago, I was sitting in a presentation and the presenter talked about the word try. There is no try. There's only do. And I thought a lot about that. Someone I was talking to the other day talked about how they are attempting to build a business. And I stopped him right there. I said, are you building a business or you're not? And they're like, I am. I'm building a business. I'm like, then get rid of attempting. Attempting becomes limiting. What limiting language are you utilizing that you need to get rid of? Think about what those words are. Ask others around you. Get feedback from others about what words you say a lot. When our youngest was in middle school, one of the teachers made a comment to us that Logan is always saying that he's sorry. He's sorry for this. He's sorry for that. And the teacher was like, he doesn't need to be sorry for everything. And I feel like his self-esteem is kind of deflated. So what I began to do is I began to observe what was happening in our home. And I realized that we, as his parents and his sibling, the only sibling that was at home at that point in time, was always saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Now, I'm sorry is not a bad thing, but saying it when there really doesn't need, when it doesn't need to be said, is. Because again, what is that doing? That's deflating the person, making someone feel bad or owning up or feeling responsible when they're not really responsible. So being responsible for your own feelings. Again, tapping into what it is you're saying, what it is you should be taking out of your vocabulary. All right, the power of the pause. I love this. The power of the pause is really, really important. And the reason why the power of the pause is so important, so as we talked about those words you can eradicate, the filler words and the crutch words, how you can get rid of them, besides going to a Toastmasters meeting, and as I said, they have this awe bell, and every time the word is said, some filler word is said, the bell should be rung, and the awe counter gives a report at the end of the meeting, who said what filler words, or if you have a double start, how to get those double starts out of your vocabulary as well. The power of the pause. By pausing, it allows me to think about what I'm going to say next. It allows me to get rid of the filler words, the crutch words. The pause is also so important because it allows people to catch up, especially in humor. You want to have that impactful pause. You're transitioning to another statement or sentence or part of whatever presentation you're doing or conversation that you're having. Pausing. Lean into that pause. We get so wrapped up in the fact that we've got to fill every minute with something, or we can't have silence. It's amazing the inspiration and answers that will come to us and insight when we pause and take the opportunity to have that silence. Lean into the pause. The power of the pause is important. In fact, Paul Harvey was one of those individuals that utilized the power of the pause in his work. That was incredibly impactful. So utilize it, start using it today. Pause. As you pause, you're going to come across more confident. You're going to come across more knowledgeable. And people are going to lean in to get the next sentence, the next thought. Some other vocal extras that you can do are the whisper. We'll talk about vocal variety in just a minute. But the whisper, Abraham Lincoln was known for the whisper, as he would present. The echo. Echo, having that as of the people, by the people, for the people. So reiterating things that you said in a different way, but putting those alliterations together. Putting inflection, and that also takes us to vocal variety. So let's talk about vocal variety now. Vocal variety is very important in engaging others in your conversation. If I were to come on this audio program and I would start talking like, welcome everyone, thank you for joining me today. I'm so excited that you're here. I know that you're going to learn a lot. Pretty soon you would be gone, oh, you were falling asleep. You're falling asleep as you're driving, and that would not be good. So that is not good. Implementing vocal variety is key to communicating powerfully, verbally, and with that sound. Now, vocal variety is interesting because when we speak, if I were to listen to the way you speak, the tones of the words that you use, the tone in your voice as you speak to me, and I were to go to a piano, sit down at the piano, and start playing each of the notes of the words that you said, how many notes would I be able to hit? Typically, most individuals don't speak that many notes or tones, if you will, on a piano. The more notes or what they call melody that you can get into your voice, the more interesting you are. So the higher you can go and the lower that you can take someone in some type of speech or presentation or interaction. Think about it when you are really engaged with your friends in a conversation. You typically are not talking to each other like, yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to do that. Who wants to go out Friday night? Yeah, I want to go out Friday night. You typically, you're not going to have that kind of conversation with your friends or your family. No, you're going to be like, who wants to go out Friday night? What do you guys want to do? So again, we put more vocal variety, we put more excitement. That's the energy that happens in vocal variety. Vocal variety really is critical. Ronald Reagan is known for his inflection into those words. Also, as you want to make more impact with your vocal variety, you want to, especially for women, women have a tendency that speak in higher ranges. So again, if we were to take that voice, put it on a piano, and they probably speak maybe a little more like this, they're a little bit higher like this, and that's what they do, and they speak really high, and perhaps it's a little shrill, and our ear actually starts tuning it out. Whereas if we want people to really buy into what we say, we need to speak lower and slower. Not mumbling, but lower and slower. Margaret Thatcher learned this important principle. In fact, she probably would not have been elected or won the election to become prime minister had she not gone through some private coaching with regard to her tone. Her tone was so critical in order to improve that she was taught to slow down, speak a little bit lower. And you can actually see different clips of how she made that improvement. Your vocal variety will help you be more effective in your ability to communicate effectively with your words. Now, energy in your words is also important, and that adds to the vocal variety. When I want to make a point and I really want to capture your attention, I may speak really loud and I may be really robust with my tone, and I want to really wrap you in, and I want you to feel penetrated in your heart and your ears what it is I'm about to tell you. Then I might use a pause. And then I might speak really quietly because I want you to really capture this and the seriousness. And then I want to build and bring you back and bring you on that journey. So the more vocal variety that I'm able to add, the more melody that I am able to add to my voice, to the tones that I share with you, the more interesting I become to interact with, to communicate with, to listen to engage with, and the stronger my executive presence will be. Your voice is such a great instrument. It can be such a great tool for good. It can be such a great tool to help you achieve your goals. Next, because we've got some time on this module, we haven't covered this, is I'd like to talk about humor in communication. Humor is critical. Don't we all love to laugh? Doesn't laughter release stress? It helps release stress. It actually will improve your health. In fact, I was reading the other day that as kids, Kids will laugh about 300 times a day versus an adult, only 15. That's really sad. One of my affirmations is, I am humor. I am laughter. Because I love to laugh. I love to hang with people that make me laugh. Laughter is such a key to be able to connect with others. It brings people together. So let me share with you some do's and don'ts with regard to humor. But what humor can do is it can teach without being a sermon. Humor is a great way to teach a lesson, a principle, to make a point with humor. It's a great tool. Humor can also control nervousness with an interaction you might be having. So it can help control that nervousness. Now, some people perhaps use humor as a crutch, and there's obviously appropriate times to use humor and not. So you have to be the judge of that. But humor can be a great tool for you in that aspect. Humor can get a point across, sometimes more effectively than anything else. Humor is really key. Humor also can break the tension. So something's a little bit tense, a little bit serious. Maybe you're nervous. Quick, somebody tell me a joke. Make me laugh. Show me something funny on Facebook. I love to find things that make me laugh, make me giggle. I love to laugh. Ha, ha, ha. For laughing is so key to success. In fact, I had one of the top humorists from the country speak on my podcast, The Executive Edge. And if you haven't had an opportunity to check it out, I would go to iTunes or Stitcher. Look for it. Her name is Jeannie Robertson. And if Jeannie Robertson is coming to your city, I would definitely say, go see her. So that's a plug for Jeannie Robertson. She's so funny. And she finds humor in everything she does. And in fact, on my podcast, I had her on because I wanted her to talk about how humor can help us tap into our edge for success. How humor is so important for us to implement in our business, in our life, to reach the success that we desire. Keeping that sense of humor is so, so important. All right, so some things that you don't do with humor. Don't try to include jokes in written documents. It falls flat. Yes, I try to experiment with that. Sarcasm doesn't come across very well in a written document. So don't include them in written documents. Don't build a presentation around jokes. So you don't want your whole presentation to be around certain jokes. Now, if you're a comedian, there's a whole set of rules. But again, we're not talking about that. We're talking about how to implement executive presence and be more polished and professional. You don't want to use humor to alienate anyone. So when you're in doubt, if it's going to alienate someone, leave it out. For instance, a couple of weeks ago, I was giving a presentation in Atlanta, and I was talking about nonverbals. I was actually talking about nonverbals on the witness stand. I was speaking to a bunch of expert witnesses, and I was teaching them how they can have more effective nonverbal communication and how they can use their body language to persuade and be open and feel more confident on the witness stand. One of the things that I found was I like to use a lot of video when I speak or teach. I think video is a great tool. It just shows and shares a message, and it's a great medium to put points across. And there's humor that can come through that as well. And one of the videos that I had pulled up to watch was this video of Eddie Murphy, who he couldn't talk, and it must have been some movie, and I don't think I'd seen the movie. And he's going in and ordering coffee at Starbucks and he can't talk for some reason. So he's trying to do with his signs what he wants to order at Starbucks. But what I hadn't realized, I mean, when I saw the video, I'm like, oh yeah, this looks good. That looks fun. But when I like put it in my PowerPoint presentation, I was reviewing my presentation and going over it. When I first hit play on the video, the very beginning, and you almost don't see it, but you do see it, is he flips someone, the bird, on the camera. So that's what you see, is the bird being flipped. And at first I thought, well, okay, well, I didn't really see it till I looked at it a couple times. So I was debating, do I leave that in? Because, you know, some people might find that funny, but that's not really part of my brand. That's really not who I am. And then I had some doubt. So guess what? I left it out. So when in doubt, leave it out. So I didn't even show that video because of what happened, the very front part of that. And I just didn't want to be offensive to anyone. And quite frankly, I knew that would be associated with my image and my brand. And that was not the right space or the right step to have happen with that. Don't use off-color words or phrases. You know, there's some speakers out there, and again, I'm not going to name any names, but I'm pretty disappointed that they feel like they have to use these swear words that are these shocking swear words in front of thousands of people. And they use the excuse, they do it so that it breaks them out of what they're thinking or stating. You don't have to use off-color words or phrases to do that. There's a whole vocabulary that you can utilize that can get across your meaning and project in a way that will be impactful and communicate the message that you're trying to communicate. So again, swearing, off-color jokes, there's no need for that, especially if you are trying to increase your executive presence. Don't wait for laughter. So you tell a joke and you wait. Anyway, yes, you want to pause to let people catch up. But when you are actually waiting, okay, you're supposed to laugh now. That is not going to be very effective. That is not going to be effective in your humor. Then don't laugh at your own jokes. So I guess I did this once and I was actually in a speech contest. This is a humorous speech contest. And I was laughing at my own jokes. But I was laughing because I was laughing at myself. So it wasn't really at my jokes, but I guess someone thought it was. So be cognizant that you're not laughing at your own jokes. So you don't want to start laughing as you're telling the joke either. So again, there's that timing that accounts in that. You do want to use truth with a little spice. So you're not lying, but base your humor on truth. Spice it up a little bit. You can exaggerate a little bit. For instance, one of the stories that I tell is about how I got bucked off of my horse when I was about 8-9 years old. And her name was Buzzy May. Now my spice is, and this really happened, my arm went in a major cow pie. Now a little spice might be is, I fell smack dab into the cow pie. So you have a different visual picture if I say I fell right into a cow pie, a batch of manure, batch of cow crap, rather than if I were to say, oh, my elbow fell into the cow pie. So you get a bigger picture. It's a little more funnier if you think, oh, wow, she fell in. How much did she fall in? And our imagination goes to work. So use the truth with a little spice. Do make fun of yourself. If you can't laugh at yourself, who can? This is where, quite frankly, I have the most humor. In fact, I have a sister-in-law that gets my humor because I make self-deprecating comments and she gets it. She laughs. And I love Denise because she laughs at my jokes. So I appreciate that about her. Do use visual humor. Again, as I share that experience with you about the cow pie, as you paint that picture for others, people are able to grasp that humor. And that's some of the most effective way that you can use humor in your communication. You do want to carefully plan your approach in your humor and the way that you take that. And then include humor in a message. Humor is such a great tool for you. In fact, Bob Hope said, humor is the welcome mat between a speaker and his or her audience. When they laugh, they're on your side. The laughter makes them your friends. It's the most powerful ammunition you can carry. And wasn't Bob Hope an incredible emissary for laughter and for humor? He was superb at making that happen. All right, in this module, we have talked about what power words to implement, what process to implement to communicate with diplomacy and tact. We have taken you through that model to take time to pause. We've talked about the power of the pause. We've talked about what words to eradicate from your vocabulary, how important it is for you to do so. We've talked about vocal variety, how your melody will make your speaking much more interesting, how your tone will impact your ability to communicate. And we've also talked about humor and how important humor is to get your point across, to interact. Your words are so important. And most importantly, in this section, we have talked about the power of your words, the power of your words to lift others, or the power that can tear others down. Your words and your ability to communicate and use words is such a power that you hold in your hand to affect change. We've also explored with you how you speak to yourself and how important it is that you speak to yourself in a positive, loving way. And that you root out of your life that negative self-talk and lift yourself up and really pause and look at the words that you're saying. I shared with you a resource, Toastmasters International. They are worldwide. There's just a few countries that they're not in yet. Their goal is to get in every country. So I would encourage you to check them out. Go to a meeting, see what you think. If you're wanting to improve your executive presence, that is a great tool, pretty inexpensive tool to do. You can commit as deeply or be as lackadaisical. Now I'm going to throw a word out that I can't say today. Lackadaisical. There you go. About it. Toastmasters is a great way to improve your vocabulary as well. And then that's what I like to lastly touch on today is increasing your vocabulary. Putting in words, learning more words. There's so many words. There's so many words to learn and implement and help us become more polished, professional, and positive in all that we do and all that we do and say and communicate. I hope that you will find use in what I've shared with you. It is my intent that your life, your words be filled with light so that you feel light and you feel empowered, inspired, and you can go and help others achieve more than they think possible. Because I know that nothing is impossible. And I know that if you implement these strategies that we've talked about and explored throughout this module, that you can uncover, realize, and accomplish your full potential. Thanks for hanging in with me through module 3. Next up will be module 4, and I'm excited to take this journey with you.